Chapter 42. 1979 was a year for local elections in Mississippi, my third as a registered voter. It was much quieter than the first two. The sheriff's race was uncontested, something that was unheard of. There had been a rumor that the Pagets had bought a new candidate, but after the parole debacle, they backed off. Senator Theo Morton drew an opponent who brought me an ad that screamed the question, "Why did Senator Morton get Danny Paget paroled? Cash. That's why." As much as I wanted to run the ad, I had neither the time nor the energy for a libel suit. There was a constable's race out in Beat 4 with 13 candidates, but other than that, the races were fairly lethargic. The county was fixated on the murders of Farguson and Teal, and more important, on who might be next. Sheriff McNatt and the investigators from the state police and state crime lab had exhausted every possible clue and lead. All we could do was wait. As July 4th approached, there was a noticeable lack of excitement about the annual celebration. Though almost everyone felt safe, there was a dark cloud hanging over the county. Oddly, rumors persisted that something bad would happen when we all gathered around the courthouse on the 4th. Rumors, though, had never been born with such creativity, nor spread as rapidly as in the month of June. On June 25th, in a fancy law office in Tupelo, I signed a pile of documents that transferred ownership of the Times to a media company owned in part by Mr. Ray Noble of Atlanta. Mr. Noble handed me a check for $1.5 million, and I quickly and somewhat anxiously walked it down the street where my newest friend, Stu Holland, was waiting in his rather spacious office in the Merchants Bank. News of such a deposit in Clanton would leak overnight, so I buried the money with Stu, then drove home. It was the longest one-hour drive of my life. It was exhilarating because I had cashed in at the market's peak. I had squeezed top dollar out of a well-heeled and honorable buyer who planned to make few changes to my newspaper. Adventure was calling me, and I now had the means to answer. And it was a sad drive, because I was giving up such a large and rewarding part of my life. The paper and I had grown and matured together. Me as an adult, it as a prosperous entity. It had become what any small-town paper should be, a lively observer of current events, a recorder of history, an occasional commentator on politics and social issues. As for me, I was a young man who had blindly and doggedly built something from scratch. I suppose I should have felt my age, but all I wanted to do was find a beach, then a girl. When I returned to Clanton, I walked into Margaret's office, closed the door, and told her about the sale. She burst into tears, and before long, my eyes were moist as well. Her fierce loyalty had always amazed me, and though she, like Miss Callie, worried way too much about my soul, she had grown to love me nonetheless. I explained that the new owners were wonderful people, planned no drastic changes, and had approved her new 5-year contract at an increased salary. This made her cry even more. Hardy did not cry. By then, he had been printing the Times for almost 30 years. He was moody, cantankerous, drank too much like most pressmen, and if the new owners didn't like him, then he'd simply quit and go fishing. He did appreciate the new contract, though. As did Davy Big Mouth Bass. He was shocked at the news, but rallied nicely at the idea of earning more money. Baggy was on vacation somewhere out west, with his brother, not his wife. Mr. Ray Noble had been reluctant to agree to another 5 years of Baggy's sluggish reporting, and I could not in good conscience make him a part of the deal. Baggy was on his own. We had 5 other employees, and I personally broke the news to each of them. It took all of one afternoon, and when it was finally over, I was drained. I met Harry Rex in the back room at Pepe's, and we celebrated with margaritas. I was anxious to leave town and go somewhere, but it would be impossible until the killings stopped.